Can't find you. Every time I go out to your place, you gone fishing.
Ah, you know.
But there's a sign upon your door.
Uh-huh.
Gone fishing.
Well, welcome back.
And last week, we had
Joshua from Marker 54 Lures on, and today we're going to do part two. So, are you all there? Same fish time, same fish channel. We're back with Captain Barry, Captain Kale, and Josh from Marker 54 Lures, and the strange one at the control. So, anyway, enough with the music. Okay, quiet. Bing Crosby, you never can get him to shut up, you know. Louie ain't bad, but Bing, he just won't quiet down. All right, anyway, what, you know, we during the break, while we were going from part one to part two, what was this story with the tarpon and all this? What the heck are we talking about
here?
We were
talking about guiding and guides and how...
About...
Joshua and myself, we both, like, made it for our friends who are captains. And we were just, like, sharing stories about, like, for instance, a lot of people want to go for tarpon in our area. Guide for tarpon, that's the big money maker. It's like, everyone wants
that. They call them the Silver King, not because they're shiny and bright, is because they're worth their weight in silver.
Right. So, Josh was asking me about one of my experiences. He was telling me about one of his, and I had a few to share about the tarpon. I've made it for, like, Captain Andrew a couple times. And it's funny how everyone's so amped to catch a tarpon, you hook one, hand in the rod, and within like 30 seconds after its first big run or two, they're like, I'm done, I can't hold on to the rod anymore. And you just kind of like, you're like, you have at least minimum 20 minutes to go. Like, what do you want me to do? I'm gonna reel
this fish in. What are we gonna do for the next hour here?
Right.
We feel like it only takes an hour to reel one in. Fuck up, buddy. You know, throw a pair.
You got a stool on the bow of the boat. How easy
right.
Is it gonna get?
Your
you know?
Wife's got brass ovaries. She did it. What's wrong with you?
Right. I mean, these are 200-pound, for the lack of a better word, athletic fish.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
This is a 200-pound fish that will destroy you.
Yeah.
And I had three guys on the boat with me one day. All three of them grew marijuana, medicinal marijuana for the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
And probably the best tarpon day I've ever seen, because you've been there before. 250,000 tarpon rolling around the boat and not a one will eat.
Yeah, that's very common.
It happens all the time.
Uh-huh.
We get out, I find a school of thread fins, I throw the cast net on thread fins. I've got probably 100 6-inch thread fins in the live well.
I bet you the sun was out, there wasn't a chop on the water.
It was a beautiful day. It was you couldn't have asked for a better day.
Uh-huh.
I had the tarpon chummed up behind the boat, which I have never had happen before. I've got a pot of 100 of them sitting there looking at me, waiting for me to throw them more food. And I'll crush up the thread fins, throw them out, and they're knocking them out of the water and going ape crap. And I, come on, guys, get these rods in the water. I put thread fins on all the rods, they cast out, and these guys are so baked that they're losing fish. They're not setting the hook. They're completely missing them. I'll watch that rod tip twitch.
Yeah,
and they're staring.
Man.
Yeah,
okay.
They're staring off into
what
the
do I
sun.
Do now, man?
Ooh, look, a seagull.
Boy, pretty fish.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. They're so pretty, man.
It was
awesome.
It was
what
like
are we doing
fishing,
now?
Right. It was like fishing with three Jimi Hendrix on the boat or Cheech and Chong on the boat. It was unbelievable.
That's my experience. I was mating for my buddy Nino, the guy in Corpus, and I'm sitting up on the tower, and the redfish eats the lure, spits it out. Eats the lure, spits it out, eats the lure, spits it out. And the young lady who was fishing was like, they're just not hitting it. And I said, he hit it three times. He was like, come on, sweetie, set the hook. I'll do it again. Oh, still not going to do it? Do it again. You know, and that's what you get with the gulp bite. They just keep hitting it and hitting it and hitting it. And she just reeled it in. There's nothing here. I'm like, you have no idea. No. I'm watching them.
It's all, you know, and I had the opposite thing. I'm on a charter, and I've got these guys, and I'm fishing this very, very shallow flat with a very deep drop off. And as long as I stay about 20, 25 feet back in the shallows, and I mean, I'm sitting in 12 inches of water, right? Beautiful, clear water, grass down there, probably about 4 inches of water, grass comes up the rest of it, and then it drops off to about a 5-6 foot hole. And there was tons of fish in that hole. But you got to throw it in there, and they go up and down. It's kind of a longer, kind of like a ditch. And so they go up and down looking for food all day. You get a bait in there, and you're going to wait 3 to 10 minutes before you get a hookup. Well, I would cast that guy's line all the way up in there. It would hit, and I'd turn around to help somebody get theirs going. I'd turn around and look, and out there between the boat and the drop-off, you can see his bait swimming around there. And I walk over, and I say, "No, Bud, can you see your bait?" "Yeah, yeah, yeah, it's right there." I'm like, "Yeah, it looks pretty good, doesn't it?" "Yeah, yeah, yeah, look at it. It's right there." I said, "Now, can you see everything around that bait?" "Yeah, yeah, it looks really good, boy. Do you see any fish?" "No, no, no, but it looks really good, doesn't it?"
"You said, like, they'd come."
And I say, "Go ahead, reel it in." I cast it back out there and get him back in the ditch, and somebody would hook up because, you know, they were leaving the bait out there. And I turn around, and there it is again. After about 3 times, I just didn't say anything. At the end of the day, he's yelling at me because everybody caught fish but him.
I believe it.
He's mad at me because I'm a lousy captain. And I said, "Well, I thought you enjoyed looking at your bait. You seem pretty excited about it." "Well, I wanted to catch some fish." I said, "Well, you had that decision to make while you were on the boat. Do you want to watch your bait and see how cool the bait looks, do a little circles and flips? Or did you want to leave it over where you can't see it and catch fish? You chose A." Yeah. "I was hoping for B, but you made that decision." "Well, that has nothing to do with it. Why did I catch it?" I was like, "Really?"
Oh, yeah. I had one like that. We get to the first hole, husband, wife, daughter, daughter's fiance. High tide. Listen, guys, you have to cast under the mangroves. It's high tide. It's where those fish are going to be. If you can't cast into the mangroves, I'll cast for you. Wife, daughter, even the fiance. "Yeah, go ahead and cast for us, Captain." I cast them all out there. Said to the husband, "Do you want me to cast?" "No, I got it." And he casts 8 feet short. Meanwhile, those three are reeling in redfish. I said, "You have to be underneath those mangroves in order to catch these fish. Do you want me to cast for you?" "I got it." This went on all day. Later in the day, when the tide went out, I said, "Okay, guys, just cast short of the mangroves."
He's throwing it into the mangroves.
There's a ditch. There's a ditch in front of the mangroves. That's where those fish are going to be. All three of them cast out there, pull in redfish. He casts off the other side of the boat. "Sir, the redfish are over here." "I got it." "Look, you're seeing them catching redfish where they're casting. Why would you not cast over there?" "I got it." "Fine, you got it." When we get back to the dock, the first words out of his mouth are, "Well, I'm not paying." "Well, I can't wait to hear your theory on this." And he says, "Well, I didn't catch any fish. So I got 4 redfish in the live well. There's 4 of you on the boat." "Well, I didn't catch one." "You know what, sir? You're absolutely right. I went back there, opened up the live well, pulled out a redfish, and put it back in the water." What are you
really
doing?
"You did that?"
"Yeah. What are you doing? You didn't catch one." "That'll put us over limit." "I can't believe you just did that." "Well, believe it. I just did." I said, "And by the way, you're not leaving without paying." And he begrudgingly paid. I put the money in my pocket, started cleaning up the boat, just getting ready to push off the dock, and the wife comes screaming back down the dock, "Captain, Captain, Captain." I figured they left a camera or a shirt or something on the boat. "Yeah, what you need? Did he tip you?" "Well, ma'am, I don't know. I didn't count the money. Would you please?" "Absolutely." And I counted it. I said, "No, ma'am, he didn't tip me. You stay here." And she went back up the dock. And a couple minutes later, her husband come down begrudgingly, "Here!" and handed me a $100 bill. I said, now there's a woman who knows she's married to an a-hole. I'll never charter with you again. Could I have that in writing, please?
Well, the hard part for me, I quit chartering not because of people like the ones we're talking about, because what would break my heart is I would get these amazing folks on the boat, literally, and I wanted to show them the world. I wanted them to have the fishing experience, their life, and the fish wouldn't bite. And it would break my heart. If somebody's a jerk, I didn't care. They get off the boat. I say, okay, I just put their name on a list and said, you know, if they call, they're not going back out with me. Get somebody else. I never cared about the obnoxious ones. They make the most fun stories. But what used to break my heart is when I know I could catch all these fish. Oh, yeah. I have caught all these fish. And then you get these wonderful, amazing people, and it just wouldn't happen. Mm. And that used to break my heart. Yeah. That actually broke my heart the most.
Definitely.
But as far as Marker 54, no broken hearts when you're throwing a Marker 54 lure. You're going to catch all the fish.
Frank made that guarantee, not Joshua.
By the way, I've been sitting here like playing with the shrimp while you've been telling these stories, and I realized, because I know how much you've engineered this bait, Josh, that when it's, I'm sure, on like a slack line in a fish's mouth, I'm sure you took into account that it, even though the weight of the hook is near it's on the shank but near the bottom, it's not going to fall out. It's going to, like, go like that in the fish's mouth. It's not going to assist in unhooking
the
fish,
going
right?
Like that, Barry keeps thinking he's on his TV show. What the heck are you talking about, Barry? I can't even see it.
You're one of the few people, right. But what you've noticed is that our shank on our barb shaft is about 15% longer than a normal hook.
That too. Yeah, so it's going to stay in that fish's mouth even on a slack
now,
line.
Barry is actually hanging the lure from a pencil to see how it's going to be when it's in the fish's mouth.
With a slack line, exactly.
Once the line goes slack, he can tell now, and it's hanging at kind of an angle. It's not a straight up and down thing.
Right, but because I thought, see how the weight's down here, Frank? It's more towards the, I don't know, the bend of the hook. You would think that that's going to, like, if I hung it, it's going to maybe help it, I don't know, push out of the fish's mouth, but no, it's going to...
Which can happen with trout.
Yeah, exactly.
They've got such fleshy mouths. You set the hook, you rip a hole in their mouth, and if you stop reeling and give them any slack, that hook falls out.
Right.
It even does it with circle hooks.
Exactly, it does.
Well, you can feel the reds working their crushers, trying to... you feel them. They're popping that thing, trying to get out of their mouth. Snook are real bad about it. But this kind of goes back to y'all's story when you have clients that sometimes just won't cooperate. You know, I have a buddy, and I'm sure you've had clients like this, and he's a pro. He knows it all. He goes two times a year, and he's an absolute pro.
Sure.
And so, literally, the last time we went with my buddy, I won't name him publicly, but I wrote 12 on the front of the boat, 3 on one side, and 9 on the other, because we sight cast a lot. And I'm like, 12. He throws at 10. I'm like, no, that's not 12. Look at the boat, then throw. And then we started doing distance control. 20 yards was 60 yards. 60 yards was drop at the boat. But one of the things we engineered into the lure is that this lure is not the perfect cast. So the lure hovers in position. It takes about 5 or 6 seconds to go 5 feet. So with my buddy, I'm not trying to make him make that perfect cast right on the red so he doesn't get too far or spook it.
Sure.
I'm like, throw it about 10 feet in front of him, and it'll still be there when they get there. And he's moving that lure like crazy, and it moves about 3 feet in 10 seconds, and here come the redfish. Same with on the oyster barge when you're like, don't let it go too deep, you'll snag it. It'll land on his feet, he picks it back up.
Right.
But the funniest stories we have in Texas, because like you were asking about earlier, what's it like? We do a lot of sight casting. It's a shallower water. We all run tower boats. Everybody's 11 feet up in the air. I'm 18, and I'm way up there. And so we're all looking at them.
I thought you were a little high.
I don't even have a tall tower. I have what's called a mid tower. And so we run a lot of different boats. We do a lot of sight casting. And so one of the things you do is you try to keep it off the bottom, but you can sort of finesse over top of those oyster bars. And one of the ways to do it is with being really high up. You got a lot of line angle, you stay on top, what's called staying on top of the lure, even with a heavy weight. Or with wire lures, it'll actually hover above it. But it's a fishing technique that we use in Texas because of the conditions. You know, you said a 5-6 foot hole. I fish East Matagorda Bay. I think that's the deepest part of the entire bay. is 5-6 feet. I fish a lot of 6-8 inches because we go where other people can't go.
Yep.
We have boats with no sides. You can always see what we call the stick boat because that's the Florida guy in the tower pushing the boat with a stick like he's in Venice.
Sure.
You're like, why is he pushing that with a stick? I wonder if his motor's broken. Oh, whatever. And so we're running a lot of towers. We're doing a lot of drifting, and we fish a lot of 8-9 inches. But you have to make a lot of perfect casts. You have to really
be very precise in that shallow water.
Because the noise, the speed, that if you get a bad plunk, then those reds are, boom, I mean, they're in the next county.
Yeah.
So you really have to fish
like,
a lot
differently.
They're like
that here also. One slam of the live well lid and they're gone.
Yeah, I've seen that in a lot of y'all's boats. You a lot of gaskets on those live wells.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even the boat design is differently. I think a lot of people begrudgingly don't like the tunnel hulls because they tend to burn up the flats a lot, and that is the thing in Texas.
We cross a lot of open water here, and if it gets rough out, those tunnel boats just beat the daylights out of you.
I know. My kiddies will attest to that.
Yeah. The problem with the tunnel hulls is they're basically a modified flat-bottom boat.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a little bit of a depression in the center where the water can go up and then raise up to get the prop engaged in the water once it starts moving. But here, it's more about comfort because even in Charlotte Harbor, we've got several miles from one side of the harbor to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're staying on one side, say if you come out of Alligator Creek or Punta Gorda Isles and you just fish the east side, those flat bottoms are great.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got to cross the harbor, it's going to beat the snot out of you. So
yeah, if I ever win the lottery, I'm buying an Egret boat because they have hydraulic tunnels in them. You can close the tunnel to cross the harbor.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
But they're $120,000 boats.
Well, speaking of what you're talking about, the tunnels, our travel lanes have made adjustments. So like in South Corpus Christi, because we have to go across Baffin Bay, you'll die. I mean, it will throw you out of the boat. And so we all run the shorelines. We lift up the jack plate, run them at 6. We have a modified low water intake so we can still pee. And we will run the whole shoreline on windy days because I ain't getting out there. I'll crack my boat in half.
We do the same thing here. We'll run those shorelines as far as we possibly can.
Oh, yeah.
And the nice thing about us is we can run off of the shorelines,
mm-hmm.
especially on the east side of the harbor because it's protected by a sandbar. And you can be 100 yards, 200 yards off the shoreline, still be protected from the waves by the sandbar, but still be in deep enough water that you're not buzzing over the redfish, buzzing the mangroves,
mm-hmm.
spooking fish. And it works well, but it's a practice that we do here also.
Yeah, the tunnel hull boat is a gift and a curse. You get a lot of guys, you know, we were talking earlier with guides. You know, my buddy Nino just took his sticker off because he was basically, he said, it doesn't say Nino's Guide Service. It says, come fish next to me. And so
you'd
see
him
turn. They'd do a hard turn, and they'd go, oh, he's a guide. He must be in the spot.
Right.
When I first did my boat, and it had Fishing Franks on it, and it had, you know, fishing charters and all this other kind of cool stuff on it, that lasted a month. Took the pressure washer out. Luckily, I did vinyl letters, and I just blew them off. Every marking off that boat I could get off of it, because I literally have one couple. I'm sitting there with four people on the boat, and we're catching fish. And they pull up, but they won't pull up, like, next to you. They pull up next to you, but out in front of you. So now they're sitting in the trough. The fish won't bite.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you pull up on a series of potholes, and they come up to go next to you. But instead of hanging back or being even with you, they got to get ahead of you a little bit so they can cast in there a little bit further. Well, then they're too close to the hole. The fish don't bite.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just move and go to another spot. And then they come up. And I move, go to another spot. And I got on the boat with them. And I asked my customers, I said, please just ignore anything you hear in the next few minutes. And I said, please just kind of watch the birds over there. And I got on his boat with a rope. I said, now you get two choices. Tie this onto your boat, and I will drag you around the rest of the day. You'll be where I want you to be. You can catch fish, have a good time, but you're not going to kill my fishing every time you decide you got to follow me. So you got two choices. Get out or tie this rope to your bow, and I will drag you around the rest of the day. And one of them, and I calmly reminded her that I was going to beat him up every time she yelled at me.
We don't have the problem in the lure business. We have the name on the side of the boat. But roll it into the ramp with the truck that says Marker 54 and the boat that says Marker 54. Everybody who was busy suddenly walks over with their hand up because they know they're going to get a sample. And so it's like free lures here. So you kind of have to watch what you're advertising, because if you're a guide, you're like, I know all the good spots, follow me. And if you're a fishing lure company, you're like, we're going to give you free stuff.
I have left many a recreational fisherman on a sandbar.
I can honestly tell you, 99% of the time I enjoy it. And I have so many really good friends that I made on the water because they came up and said, hey, you know, can we fish? And I'm like, yeah, pull in, just stay right there, you know, do this, do that. And there's a cop in town. Him and I are literally extremely good friends because he was over there and he was trying to fish. And I said, come on over here, just get right there, cast up in there. I said, but don't go any further because then you're going to spook us out. And I said, I'll be happy to share all these fish. But when they come in and they don't ask and then they screw up your fishing, I'll just leave and go to another spot.
Oh, yeah?
But after three or four spots, I tend to get a little irate about it.
Jeez,
you know?
Three or four? My gosh, yeah. That's...
Yeah. I tried to keep my temper pretty good because basically as a general rule, I mean, we do 60, 80,000 people a year through Fish and Franks. I know a lot of people, and I don't want to make them mad because most of them are really nice. But literally, if you see me on the water, just say, hey, Frank, is there a place I can fish? Sure, I'll show you where to go and anchor up, and no problem. Because by doing that, I had the guys, when I sucked and I couldn't find a fish, they'd see me going by, they'd call on the phone and say, hey, Frank, got a bunch of fish over here. Why don't you come over and join us? And, I mean, made me look like a hero many times where I would have really sucked on a stick. You know, so
fishing
it was awesome. So it's just when you get those people who don't want to be sociable or ask, those are the ones that mess you up. But I can't even imagine owning a lure company. I know what I get hit with. I mean, I do about 10 grand a year in charity because, you know, the big stores won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting hit up once to five times a week for different charity stuff. And I got to hold it at around 10 grand because I don't have that much money. That's a lot of money for my little store.
Sure.
So I can't even imagine what you go through.
Well, we are the first to dial when it's CCA banquet season. You always know the CCA is in banquet season because, like, hey, you got some stuff to donate. That and everybody who's got an Instagram account and at one point caught a fish thinks they're the next thing that's going to blow you up.
I can tell you, I told the CCA where they could stick it when they called up and said, so what'd you guys do today? We took trout, snook, and redfish, made it out of season for the next year. I said, that's what you thought was an accomplishment? You really think that was a good thing? You know, we've got more snook than we've ever had. So I told them, nah, you go somebody else for money. So anyway, we've been talking about fishing. I've been having a good time. All of a sudden, I mean, show's up already.
Goes quick when you're having fun.
I guess if I just turn this up, it'll work over here. I got to get you to run the board, Kale. Anyway, this is Fish and Frank. That's Captain Kale. That's Captain Barry. That's Joshua from Marker 54. Been having a great time talking. I don't know if we really accomplished anything, but we've had a lot of fun not doing it. So thank you all for listening. We'll catch you on the next God and Fishing.
Just a wishing.
Baba Bing, I've stopped by your place a time or two lately, and you aren't home either.
Well, I'm a busy man, Louie. I got a lot of big deals cooking. I was probably tied up at the studio.
You aren't tied up, you dog.